Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
What if I told you somebody is manipulating our money supply? They're flooding the market with greenbacks, and in the process lowering the value of every dollar you and I spend for gasoline, food, and everything else. They are the Federal Reserve policymakers. Their decision to leave interest rates low is pushing the dollar even lower, and nervous critics are warning the Fed, don't just stand there, do something. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by BrandWeek, the news organization dedicated to the information needs of strategic-minded marketing executives with real-time coverage, now searchable at brandweek.com. And by Clarkson Potters, The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat, available now.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ryssdal. Glad to have you with us this Friday, the 27th of June. And the waning month is shaping up as the worst June the Dow has seen since 1930. The stock market tanked again today under the growing anxiety of ever higher oil prices. Inflation is rising around the world, and critics say the Federal Reserve is standing by and letting it happen with its lack of attention to the sinking dollar. Barclays Capital complained today the Fed's credibility is below zero. So what can Ben Bernanke and company realistically do about the situation? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has been asking some experts.
It's been extra hot in Washington over the past few days, but the sweating at the Fed has nothing to do with the weather. The Fed is taking heat for the weakness of the dollar. That weakness has contributed to skyrocketing oil prices. Oil is priced in dollars. When the dollar drops, oil prices rise to compensate. But John Hancock, financial services economist Oscar Gonzalez, says there are other forces at work.
The price of oil is determined in the market. It's a matter of supply and demand.
Nonetheless, oil broke above $142 a barrel today, and that has countries around the world pointing the finger at the Fed. Low U.S. interest rates are being blamed for creating global inflation. Of course, the Fed could raise interest rates to reverse this. Barclays Capital is predicting 6 interest rate increases by the end of next year.
It's just completely knuckleheaded.
Mark Gertler is an economist at New York University. He says the Fed won't act until real inflation problems start showing up in the U.S.
But if you sort of calm down and look at the facts, we're feeling the effects of food and energy prices, but that hasn't fed into core inflation or into wage inflation.
But Moody's.com chief economist Mark Zandi says if that changes, the Fed won't hesitate to raise rates.
If inflation broadly becomes unhinged, starts to rise, they have absolutely no choice. They have to sacrifice the near-term economy.
Zandi says there's no way to wring inflation out of the economy without causing some pain. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
We're seeing the results of all this financial turbulence in the not-so-friendly skies lately. Both United and American Airlines have announced they're cutting flights domestically and internationally. Across the industry, companies are trying to nickel and dime their way to profitability, hitting consumers with fuel surcharges or extra fees for baggage. But one carrier has managed to navigate a relatively smooth flight path. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler looks at how Southwest has steered clear of trouble.
Hedging is the practice of locking in prices now on the assumption that they will be higher in the future, and no airline has done better at hedging fuel than Southwest. Henry Hartefelt is an airline analyst with Forrester Research.
They have struck black gold because they've hedged their fuel for several years into the future at rates far, far below market rates.
Southwest is paying the equivalent of $51 a barrel for oil. That's about one-third the current market rate. Aviation analyst Richard Abulafia is with Teal Group.
When you've locked in a fuel price that's lower than everybody else's, and when fuel is 40 to 50% of an airline's operating cost, you're at a terrific advantage.
Enough of an advantage that Southwest can continue to offer low prices and add more routes. Again, Henry Hartefelt.
Southwest can now literally afford to charge less than its competitors and still make money.
I asked Richard Abulafia, why haven't other airlines hedged their bets?
Locking in fuel prices takes two things, one very forward-looking management and the other a strong balance sheet, and many airlines simply don't have either.
Several carriers have recently emerged from bankruptcy and don't have the funds to buy fuel in advance. Others have been burned in the past. In 2006, Delta lost over $100 million after it bought fuel hedges and the price of oil dropped. Still, this insurance policy has paid off well for Southwest. In the last 10 years, the company has saved $3.5 billion on fuel. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Well, it's not so easy for the rest of us to buck the trend in high fuel prices this summer. Just ask somebody who should know, a rodeo bull rider. Wesley Silcox is the defending world bull riding champion, and defending that title these days is a very costly challenge. He's joining us today on his cell phone on the road somewhere in the West. Hi, Wesley.
Hi.
So where have we caught up with you today?
We're somewhere in Colorado driving to Santa Fe.
And headed for an event this weekend?
Yeah, tonight we're in Santa Fe and head to Reno tomorrow.
Summertime started here. I imagine you have a lot of events.
Yeah, we've got pretty much one every day this month and got a lot of traveling to do.
So how much driving do you plan to do this summer?
Probably about 20,000 miles, probably.
Ouch. And what are you driving?
Dodge Caravan.
Now, I understand that you had a bigger vehicle, but you've kind of traded it in, so to speak?
We used to drive a pickup and a camper and a diesel, and it cost too much to drive, and so it's a little better.
If you had a camper, I assume that you were able to spend your nights in the camper, but it's actually become cheaper to take the hotel now?
Yeah, we could stay in the camper, but it still saves us money. We're going to be driving, do a lot of late-night driving anyway, so there won't be much need for a hotel.
What kind of mileage did your truck get? How much were you paying to fill that tank?
We were paying about $170 each time we filled up.
I have to tell you that we're already hearing some experts talking about gas prices maybe in the next couple of years hitting maybe $7 a gallon. Would that mean the end of life as we know it, or as you know it, being on the road like that?
Yeah, it'll cut down our traveling, and we'll probably just try and go to the bigger ones and probably go to half as many rodeos as we normally would. Hopefully the money in the rodeos gets better, and they'll help us out a little bit.
I take it you're being more selective even now with what events you compete in.
Yeah, we're just trying to go to the bigger ones, but it's been a pretty good year for me this year, and hopefully things keep going good and we can keep going to as many rodeos as we can.
How big of a group do you travel with?
There's four of us, just other bull riders. There's four of us in the van.
So what we've got here is a cowboy carpool.
Yeah, pretty much. We try and get as many as we can and keep the cost down.
Well, good luck at your next event.
All right, thank you.
Wesley Silcox is the defending world champion in bull riding. Thanks for joining us.
Yep, no problem.
The bulls were nowhere to be found again today on Wall Street, although the bears didn't do quite as much damage as yesterday. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The rising cost of gas continues to headline the presidential campaign. Democratic hopeful Barack Obama has called for tax credits and a second round of stimulus checks to help Americans absorb the expense. Presumptive Republican nominee John McCain touts his support of a gas tax holiday and offshore drilling. All the focus might be on energy prices right now, but commentator and economist Glenn Hubbard says if we really want to understand each candidate's economic platform, there's a better issue to examine.
Pop quiz. To determine our country's long-term budget future, voters in November should focus most on A, the annual cost of the Iraq War, B, the cost of extending the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts, or C, the price of an MRI. Answer, C, the price of an MRI. Keep that in mind as John McCain and Barack Obama roll out their spending priorities. Listen to what they say or don't say about health care. Rising health care costs will radically alter the nation's budget outlook over the next generation. The cost of old age entitlement programs could rise by 10 percentage points of GDP over that period. The large tax increases or spending reductions required to close this gap should be at the top of any policy agenda. Most of the healthcare debate focuses on the level of government involvement in healthcare. Senator Obama's proposals call for a larger role for government. He wants to increase access to Medicaid and give individuals and businesses greater capacity to buy into a government plan. Senator McCain's plans embrace less government participation. His proposals would grant all Americans refundable tax credits to encourage them to sign up for private insurance. The Obama campaign estimates costs of $60 billion per year. The McCain campaign would use other tax reforms to pay for new spending. But what will the plans do to health care costs? By encouraging higher deductibles and co-payments, the McCain plan will decrease health care spending. But it doesn't answer how we can reform Medicare to reduce costs. The Obama proposal tries to reduce costs by steering individuals toward government plans. But that proposal does not address the cost of public subsidies to expand government programs or the potential for innovation-unfriendly price controls. Is a large tax increase in our future? Will we be able to afford a strong national defense, promote education, and support basic research? The answer lies in healthcare policy.
Glenn Hubbard is the dean of the business school at Columbia University. He used to run the Council of Economic Advisors for President Bush. Are rising health care costs hitting you hard? Let us know at marketplace.org. Just click on Contact. Time to check the week on Wall Street with stockbroker and business analyst David Johnson in Dallas. And you have given us so far the worst June for the Dow since 1930.
Yeah, no, this is one of those days when I wish I was the sports guy or the weather guy. Or
what happened out there? Is it time to get out of the stock market?
I don't know. Well, obviously not, because classically, it's about the time that you say, gosh, I guess I better get out, that you realize that it's all over with.
Yeah, but some of us can't stomach this uncertainty. How do you know that it's come time to stop chasing bigger returns and just start managing your risk?
Well, you know, I mean, truthfully, for an investor, if you can't, you know, if investing keeps you awake at night, then you need to sort of sell down to the sleeping level whenever you can do it. But as far as just, you know, picking it up and throwing it all away, I just don't think it's time to do it. I think it's probably past time. If you're a trader, you never should have been in here. I mean, you should have been out weeks ago, and you could only be long instead of short. But I tell you, if you're a long-term investor, Bob, and you miss a turnaround, and I don't know when it would happen. I'm not sure why it would happen. But my sense is that it's going to happen maybe sooner than later. If you miss that turnaround, you take maybe a third of your rate of return away for a 10-year period.
Yeah, but that assumes that there's going to be a turnaround here. I saw somebody say that they thought this was the start of a seismic equity readjustment, which I think meant market meltdown. Are you afraid of that possibility?
I think it just sounds perfectly horrible. I don't know what a seismic readjustment is. And it may be. But, you know, I look at yesterday's market. Yesterday's market, they killed everything. They killed everything. Everything was down the same. Everything was down. All the averages were down about 3%. There are 30 stocks in the Dow. Every one of them was down, and it was down sharply, and that includes Chevron and Exxon, just as oil was making a new high.
Well, when things were
that was just throwing in the towel. That's a lot of what we saw yesterday, and that's sort of the mentality that you have to see before you can set up for some sort of a turnaround.
When things are this volatile, what does that tell us historically?
Well, it means that you're coming to a point, and you're either going to break up or break down. Mm-hmm. We're down so far right now that I really think one of the things I think the traders were telling us today, because if you notice, they were buying stocks right at the end of the day, and kind of you don't see it in the Dow. It was down 100 points, but you know, NASDAQ was down about 5. The S&P was down about 4. They were worried that good news was going to break out over the weekend. They were more worried about good news breaking out over the weekend, I think, than bad news, that on the one hand, maybe you're not going to lose, maybe you'll have another big financial house in deep trouble. But on the other hand, you know, the positive side is maybe the Fed does something. Maybe the Fed makes it easier for these big foreign investors and outside private capital to come in and invest in U.S. banks and have a bigger stake, and everything turns around. This thing is, it got silly yesterday. That's usually what happens before it gets better.
Yeah, there are some people out there who are chuckling right now at the prospect of the Fed doing something, but we will see. Thank you, David. David Johnson in Dallas. Coming up, get into the swim with a designer bikini.
I believe swimwear is basically intimate apparel to be worn in public. So I really feel that it should look phenomenal.
You bet. But first, let's do the numbers. So the Dow stumbled 0.9%, or 106 points, to close at 11,346. The Nasdaq gave back 0.25%, or 5 points, to close at 2315. The S&P 500 nudged down 0.3%, or 4 points, to end the day at 1278. For the week, the Dow tumbled 4.2%. The Nasdaq plunged 3.8%. The S&P 500 dropped 3%. The financial wheels keep wobbling. Citigroup deflated another 2.3%. J.P. Morgan Chase fell 3.5%. Washington Mutual and Wachovia each forfeited more than 4%. Bonds rose sharply. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.96. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor. Online at finrafoundation.org. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Monday. Congress is scheduled to be on break for the 4th of July holiday week. Margaret Mitchell published her novel Gone with the Wind 72 years ago. She won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction the following year. And another page from the history books, thousands of dazzled spectators looked up to see French acrobat Charles Blondin walk a tightrope over the gorge below Niagara Falls on June 30th, 1859. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Bob Moonen for Kai Ryssdal. What would you say if a member of the powerful Federal Reserve Board looked you in the eye and told you to jump? Maybe, how high, sir? In the case of a pair of successful online banking tycoons, they snapped to attention, quit their lucrative jobs, and started a nonprofit. Their mission, encouraging home ownership without throwing people to the subprime mortgage sharks. As part of our continuing coverage of the entrepreneurship in America, David Brancaccio brings us a story on a different kind of loan option.
Did you wash your hands already? Sink is over here. Where's your plate? Thank you.
John and Lupe Rodriguez live with their three daughters in a nice four-bedroom house in Ventura, California. John's a cable TV technician, and Lupe?
I work in the cafeteria. I serve and prepare breakfast and lunch for all the kids in school.
You're the lunch lady?
Yes, I am.
Lupe Rodriguez looks more like maybe a licensed hairstylist, and that turns out to be her second job. Despite three jobs between them, getting the loan to buy their house was tough. 10 years ago, the Rodriguezes filed for bankruptcy, and since then they've mostly steered clear of debt.
After that happened, we kind of stayed away from the credit at all. We just like, okay, we want nothing to do with this until we know that we can be financially set. And throughout the years, we just kind of avoided it.
But avoiding debt has its downsides. You're a lot less likely to go bankrupt, but you probably won't have a decent credit score either. People in this situation are called thin file borrowers. It could be they're new immigrants, young, or just anxious about debt. And they don't have many options when it comes to applying for a loan. John tried to go the subprime route. A broker offered him a $600,000 mortgage with low starter payments if he was willing to, get this, fake his income on the loan documents. John got himself out of there.
No. I knew my reality. I can't afford that.
Instead, he set his sights on a more modest $400,000 home in his old neighborhood north of L.A. But he still needed help with the financing, so he went to a nearby homeownership center called Cabrillo, where he had a real stroke of luck.
I went to Cabrillo, and they told me what to do, and it was about a total of 90 days of a roller coaster ride.
The ride was courtesy of a pilot project by a company called Just Price Solutions. The scheme was dreamt up by a pair of online banking pioneers, Bob Ficus and Brian Cosgrove, to offer borrowers with shaky credit an alternative to subprime mortgages. Ficus and Cosgrove teamed up with a small but very successful government agency called Neighborhood Housing Services of America. NHSA uses independent counselors to see who's a good bet for a mortgage. Ficus says he liked that idea.
You would never let people drive a car without driver training. Why let them have their first home without counseling?
And NHSA taps dozens of public, private, and nonprofit sources for money. But its service is low-tech and local, so getting a loan can take months or more. Just Price Solutions puts NHSA funding, counselors, and lenders into the same online network. Now the counselors have immediate access to every source of funding, from grants to complex mortgages. Ficus says now even someone with no credit score could get a loan right away.
The government dollars mixed with philanthropic or corporate dollars can all work together in a more effective way. And it's just, on paper, it's very simple. It's just synergy.
John Rodriguez's counselor checked the family's incomes and savings and helped them build up a credit score. Rodriguez had to prove that he paid their bills on time.
Everything that we make a monthly payment to said, if you guys can get a letter from them giving us a payment history, we can use that as a credit.
With this new credit, JPS pre-approved a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. In less than 3 months, they were in their new home. Each daughter got a room to decorate.
But let me think. She is a Dodger fan. Look at that wall.
Think Dodger blue with a 3-foot team insignia in the middle.
She's definitely wanted this for years and years, and renting, we couldn't do this.
John and his family are delighted, of course, but not everyone likes the idea of pushing home ownership so widely. Dean Baker is an economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He says it's time to recognize that it's a bad idea for lower-income families to stretch themselves financially.
If we're talking about spending more money on housing costs than necessary, that's coming at the expense of health care for their kids, of, you know, getting good food, child care. I mean, you know, this comes at the expense of something. It's not free.
John Rodriguez admits that his monthly payments are slightly higher than his rent used to be, but he says it's worth every penny.
I think the pride that you get along with it and the things that you're able to do, you know, with your own home, it pays for it.
His spell in bankruptcy years ago and the counseling with JPS have taught him the most important thing.
It's an easy balance as long as you keep all your finances straight, you know, so that you don't put yourself in any jeopardy.
In Ventura, California, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
By the way, our longtime friend Mr. Brancaccio is the host of Now on PBS, and his in-depth television report on this new approach to mortgage lending appears on many PBS stations tonight. TGIF, and you're probably ready for a weekend in the sun. Perfect time to kick off our new summer series, Hot Jobs.
We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave.
As the season of suntans and pool parties gets underway, we thought we'd check out the source for summer gear. We're paying a visit to a bikini shop in Miami Beach.
Here's one.
Now, this is a halter triangle style.
Okay.
So if you want extra support, especially for swimming, this is a great feature here. My name is Eduardo Lora, and I'm the commercial director for Shan. the retail store, as well as the U.S. market. I believe swimwear is basically intimate apparel to be worn in public. So I really feel that it should look phenomenal. When customers come in, you really need to figure out what's best for them. So you kind of have to ask a lot of personal questions. And what size are your girls?
36.
36. Okay, perfect. And on the bottom, do you want it to be skimpy or do you want more butt coverage?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot to spare.
Okay. I think that if you work with all these different elements, it helps you find the right suit for the customer. She really wants a suit that's going to make her feel not just special, but make her feel comfortable, that when she walks away, when people turn around to look at her, that it's a good look. Yeah, I think it's really funny when customers come with a certain picture and they're like, I want this suit. You know, they may be a size 14 and maybe a little bit curvier than the size 2 model on the magazine. And they're like, I want this suit and will I look this good in it? And it's just kind of funny that people would even think that. When a customer smiles and she's excited that, you know, she's got the right suit, that's really rewarding. I mean, just knowing that they're happy, because it's so frustrating. They go in there with 100 suits and they end up taking like anywhere from 1 to 5 different suits. And it's an accomplishment when I see them smile and leave and say, I can't wait to come back, or I can't wait to try them on.
I think it's really cute. I think it fits really well, too.
It fits you well. It fits your personality, because you know what? The other one, you stood and you looked elegant,
yeah,
but you didn't have the smile that you have now. And that's everything.
Trina Sargowski helped us out with this report. You can see photos of Eduardo and his Miami Beach shop on our website, marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a 529 plan can help meet your college savings goals. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, even the Queen of England's electric bill is going up, and British citizens are paying for it. The monarch's expenses increased about $4 million this year. Her total annual budget is now about $80 million. That covers things like catering, upkeep at Buckingham Palace and Windsor Castle, and travel, like her $800,000 trip to the U.S. last year. The Queen's office says rising costs are partly to blame, but the increase is twice the rate of inflation. Still, the total cost to each person is about 66 pence, about the same as downloading God Save the Queen from iTunes. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow fell 106 points, 0.9%. The Nasdaq dipped 5 points, 0.25%. The S&P 500 dropped 4 points, 0.33%. Our theme music was produced by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yor. Coming up Monday, retrofitting your home for war.
The explosion creates a shockwave, which makes your glass fly, and it flies like bullets. So when you put this film, the glass breaks, but it doesn't shatter.
I'm Bob Moon. We'll be back here on Monday. Hope you will be too.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.